Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Last week, giving the progressive talks on meditation and helping all the people here develop their minds in this powerful, peaceful, calm, still, and states which are pregnant with great wisdom, with insights, I mentioned the major obstacles to meditation and where those obstacles live, which is in that space between the knower and the known. And usually, that in the suttas, as many people have pointed out, that whenever you mention the five hindrances, you always mention their opposites, which are the seven enlightenment factors, as if these two are just the reverse sides of the same coin. And first of all, I thought I'd talk about those seven enlightenment factors this evening, but this is too many of them there, and they're too deep. And I thought that just starting on the first one, mindfulness, is more than enough to cover a talk. And so I'm going to go back to this powerful quality called mindfulness and just how it relates to this meditation. But also just to push aside some of the ideas which people have about mindfulness, and just without any real understanding of its power and its depth, and especially where it should be focused. And of course, this is many, many different levels of mindfulness. And mindfulness is not just pure knowing. This very idea of pure knowing sort of doesn't really make it clear that whenever those five hindrances are there in the background, it's not pure knowing at all. It's knowing, it's a mindfulness which has been perverted, which has been stained, which has been bent. Which is why that mindfulness, when the five hindrances are active, really is just not all that useful at all. It's faulty mindfulness. And so that's why that the five hindrances that overcoming has to be paramount to get the mindfulness which is you can trust, mindfulness which you can know that what you're seeing is accurate and true. And of course, how do you know that those five hindrances are gone? It's because the mindfulness gets incredibly strong, stable, still. It's a mindfulness which has no longer got a vested interest in what it's going to see. There's no sensory desire there. There's no ill will. It's stable because it's got rid of restlessness. And it's bright. There's no sloth and torpor there. There's no dullness. And it's stable enough to know without, wobbling or with doubt. And so in each one... When these five hindrances are completely gone, you can understand how mindfulness gains power. And especially that the mindfulness which is free of the hindrance of restlessness, that's perhaps the easiest sign to show that your mindfulness is getting strong. And this is also what I always call in the meditation talks which I give, in the books which you write, the superpower mindfulness. And that's the one to aim for in this retreat period. Sometimes I say not to do anything, just to leave things alone, but it's that superpower mindfulness which is a goal, which is attained by not doing things. And some of you have already experienced that when you really relax in this meditation retreat, you don't go working the mind too hard, the doer starts to disappear. And with it, the restlessness and the sensory desire, the ill will starts to vanish. The mind starts to have power. You can feel the energy, feeling more alive, not needing to sleep so much. The mind being more able just to settle on things and stay with them. And with it comes more happiness in the monastic life. And that's why the first part of any retreat should be establishing that degree of mindfulness. And you know you've established it well when the mindfulness is bright and energetic and it just leaps onto things and investigates it. It's like a happy, powerful mindfulness which sees deeply into things. The opposite of that is like the grey, dull mindfulness, which you go around during the day and nothing seems to be enjoyable, the whole thing seems to be dull and depressive. And if that's the state of your mind, you're just running through this monastery, just, you know, just birds again, just making all this noise, the flowers, just flowers, and enough of flowers, and the food, just all this food, can't we keep it simple, can't we do this? If you get into that type of negativity, that's a sign that the mindfulness is not strong. And it's a sign of mindfulness being strong, everything starts to become bright and beautiful. And there's a happiness, a joy which comes from mindfulness becoming strong. So that's one of its best signs. So first of all, in our meditation practice, we've got to somehow develop this joy along with mindfulness. To be able to see something and just deliberately pick out its joy. Until the point comes when the joy strengthens the mindfulness. You don't need to make that deliberate effort anymore. Just whatever you see becomes delightful. It's a perception of the beautiful, but it's a perception which comes naturally with strong mindfulness, which is why people who have strong mindfulness are naturally happy, while the great Aryans have got this enormous happiness and joy about them, simply because their mindfulness has become strong. So we develop that strength of mindfulness. And of course, how do we do it? Because we can see that the strength is built up and built up and built up by stillness. In the same way, you can actually see how those water tanks get filled and filled and filled when the rain comes down and goes into the gutters and down the pipes and through the filters into the water tank. You can see it filling up. What we mean here is the number of times you just put your bottom on the chair or on the cushion or on the stool, the number of times you just tread your walking meditation path, the number of times you keep things simple. That's all just adding water into the water tank. Of course, if your water tank's got a leak, then of course it's never going to fill. And how is that leaking? See just how the mind just leaks out. The energies go out into the world, which is what the asavas mean. These outflowings of the mind, like the leaks in the tank. And you can see just every time you start doing something, worrying about something, becoming agitated, getting out into the world, talking, whatever, thinking, fantasizing, that's always your mind leaking out. And that stops the energy of mindfulness building up and building up and building up. So part of your job is to stop the leakages in the mind by a bit of restraint. It takes a bit of restraint first of all, which is, you know, sometimes tough. It's what Ajahn Chah used to call putting the tiger in the cage. But it's worth it, because soon the water builds up behind the dam wall, the tank becomes full, you've got all this energy which comes from restraint. And once you start having this energy which comes from doing nothing, you find the mindfulness is very, very strong. It's powerful mindfulness. So as we build up this mindfulness, we've got to, first of all, use the weak mindfulness we have, the natural mindfulness, to plug up the holes. And all those holes, as I was saying last week, they exist in that space between the knower and the known. It's nothing to do with what you're experiencing. It's nothing to do with you. It's what's between you. And that's there where we plug up the holes. We make peace with whatever we experience. We don't expect anything. We don't demand anything. We're just at peace with whatever we're experiencing, which is like plugging up the holes of doing. And the more we can manage that, to keep our mindfulness, the ordinary mindfulness, the basic mindfulness, in that space between the knower and the known, the stronger the mindfulness becomes. It becomes a building up of that mindfulness, a strengthening and empowering of it. And it's not an empowering which just happens all in once, that, you know, now you've got ordinary mindfulness, the next moment you've got power mindfulness. It builds up slowly and gradually. And this is one of the great things about a meditation retreat. When we start the retreat, the mindfulness is ordinary. But little by little it starts to grow and grow and grow. As long as you don't allow the energy to fall apart or to leak, then it's going to grow and grow and grow. And with it, the mind becomes stronger. It becomes more enjoyable. The mindfulness becomes as strong, as I've said in many meditation retreats. The food tastes more delicious, the trees look greener, the waters look more yellow, the sky looks more blue. Everything starts to become enhanced, little by little. But not only that, if you're whatever you're watching in your meditation, whenever you're doing breath meditation or metta meditation or whatever, you find it's easier to watch, simply because your mindfulness has been strengthened. And it's fun to watch. This building up of mindfulness in the beginning is so important, because too many people, they start to try and watch the breath without that strong mindfulness, which means that they hold the breath far too tightly. And by holding it too tightly, they can't develop the deeper stages of meditation. They can get so far with a tightly held breath. But then what happens is that when they try and let it go to develop, you know, beautiful breath and limiters, they just can't do it. The hands are just too tightly clenched around the object. And you've got to start to let go much sooner than that. And then sometimes people say, well, if I let go, just the mind wanders all over the place. You can't even watch the breath. Just fantasies come in, thoughts, memories. It's true, because it's too early to watch the breath yet. You can't wash it easily, it's better not to wash it at all. Present moment awareness and silence. These two early stages of meditation. Bring up this non-doing. Put the attention, not on the breath, but whatever you're watching, whatever's in front of you, whatever you're hearing, seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, knowing. Just see what's in between you and that object. And put peace there. Put peace there and peace there and peace there. Make that your whole practice. Throughout the whole day, whatever you're doing, just do it peacefully. The mindfulness, the ordinary mindfulness, staying there. To make sure the energy of the mind is not leaking out into the outflowings. And if you can plug up that gap, there's nature. It's just cause and effect. The mind starts to become strong. The mindfulness starts to increase. And the mindfulness soon gets that strong. But not only you can see that gap, you can see all of the ways that the energy leaks out. You can see those hindrances and you can, you know, knock them on the head straight away as soon as they arise. Because the mindfulness is very sharp and very strong. It's very bright, as if you've got the big flashlights. And you can see every little animal scurrying on the forest floor. Super bright flashlight. In the same way you can see all the little things scurrying through your mind. You can see the ways the mind just loses its energy. It's just getting that first bit of strength in mindfulness is imperative. Once it starts to build up energy, then you can plug all the holes with greater ease, and the energy really starts to build up. And once the energy of mindfulness springs up, your mind is so sharp, so bright, and so happy. Then you can start to pick up the breath, or you can start to pick up loving kindness. Whatever you want to do, it becomes so easy. And it's because of that, that's why that when you read the Anapanasati Sutta of the Lord Buddha, you see, he always says at first, to establish mindfulness before you, first of all. Get that mindfulness strong before you even start watching the breath. It's the biggest mistake of most meditators. Mindfulness isn't strong, and then they try and watch the breath, and they find it's just so frustrating. If you do it properly, you get this beautiful, smooth path. You build up the mindfulness. You know, you can do it. Walking meditation is a great way of building up that mindfulness. The beginning of a retreat, you expect people to walk more. Build up the mindfulness in the present moment. Silence. Block all those holes where the mind's energy leaks out. Don't do so much. And then you find the energy starts to build up. That's why so many people, they start with walking meditation, with solitude, and after a while they find they just want to sit, and when they watch the breath, it's easy and it's fun meditating. So you always have to give people a lot of space at the beginning of a retreat. You can sleep a lot if you wish, rest a lot, but do it in solitude. Keep those holes plugged. The energy builds up naturally. And as it starts to build up, it becomes easier and easier to meditate. when the mindfulness gets strong enough, just when you're watching the breath, you can actually see just sometimes the way we hold that breath too tightly. And you can see just that's not the way to meditate. The mindfulness is strong enough to see those subtle defilements of the mind. The upakilesas, as I was talking about on Monday night. You can read about those defilements of the mind, but you can't see them until the mindfulness is strong. Once the mindfulness is strong enough, you can see them so clearly, you can understand the brilliance of the Buddha's teachings on these subjects. Once your mindfulness is strong, you can see that even when you start watching the breath, you can see what's going on. If you're watching the breath with peace, the mindfulness is strong enough in that gap that you don't add any hindrance there at all. There's no sort of demands, no expectations, no wantings. Then the breath is so easy to watch. For all of you who keep saying your problem is you want the jhanas or you want to get peaceful, you want this and want that, you understand that's the underlying cause, but you're not seeing it as it happens. You're inferring it afterwards. But with strong mindfulness, you can see the process as it's happening. If you can see it as it's happening, it's very easy to stop that mind just nudging for the jhanas, going off into the future, just losing its focus on the moment. You can see all this happening. And because that mindfulness is strong, you can just stop it, just like that. Stop the movement of the mind. And as you stop the movement of the mindfulness on the breath becomes so easy. It stays there without any effort. And once you start getting from those stages of meditation, that effortless awareness of the breath, minute after minute, hour after hour, you just see the snowball is starting to roll downhill and getting bigger and bigger, faster and faster. The meditation gets easier and easier. It's the early steps which are the difficult part. But once it starts really going, the mindfulness is so strong, every time it builds up, it's easy for the mind to watch the breath. And because it's easy to watch the breath, it just stays with the breath, it doesn't disturb anything. The mindfulness gets empowered by that. Makes it easy, even easier to watch the breath, which means the mindfulness gets even more powerful. You see the whole breath from the beginning to the end. And it's not say, I've got to do this. It just happens. Sometimes people misunderstand all these stages of meditation as if you've got to do one thing and then when you've done this, then you have to do the next, then you have to do the next, as if you're in control. Like moving from sort of one chapter of a book to the next. You don't do it that way. These are just what happens naturally. These are just, you're going along the road as a passenger and these are the things you pass on the way, which show you that you're making progress, you're getting closer to the destination. But you don't choose that, okay, now I've finished this one, I'll go on to the next stage. It's a natural progression, or rather a natural ingression, going deeper into the mind, into silence, into emptiness. And so you watch the breath, it just changes into a beautiful breath. Simply because the mindfulness gets strong, what it sees of the breath becomes incredibly beautiful. And these are the stages where if you get to stage of the beautiful breath, I'm a very happy teacher because I know it's just only a matter of time. As long as you don't interfere with things, the mind is just watching this beautiful breath. The mindfulness is strong at that time because it's the mindfulness which makes the breath beautiful. The breath is just the breath. It's not particularly ugly or beautiful. The beauty does not lie in the breath. The beauty lies in the mind. In the same way, that great teaching of Ajahn Chah, when Ajahn Sumedho is having a hard time in Wat Bapong, and Ajahn Chah is, Wat Bapong suffering? And Ajahn Sumedho was wise enough to say, no, Wat Bapong, the monastery of Ajahn Chah, is not suffering. He realized the suffering was in his mind. And he was putting suffering onto the monastery. In the same way, you put happiness onto the monastery. Or you put happiness onto the flowers. You put happiness onto the breath. And it becomes a beautiful breath. Just because the mindfulness has got strong. When you get to that stage of strong mindfulness and you're watching the breath, which is so lovely, so beautiful. You report that to me in your interviews and I realize this guy, this lady, has now got strong mindfulness. As long as she doesn't start to analyze and start going into vipassana, or what they think is insight, and start thinking and contemplating or writing notes about it. As long as they keep cool, keep it still, then they're going to get deeper. So with that mindfulness, once it's that strong, please remember to put it in that gap between you and the beautiful breath. How are you watching that beautiful breath? Are you now getting excited? Are you trying to hold on to it? Are you afraid of it or whatever? That's where all the defilements lie. So put that powerful mindfulness there, and you can see the subtle ones, the subtle attachments and cravings, which is another name for those hindrances. You can see it happening there. You can see that even though you've got powerful mindfulness, it's very easy to leak out. If you allow it to leak out, your powerful mindfulness, built up over many days, can just disappear within hours. Because you've managed to get a big leak in that. Desire, restlessness, the ego wanting to sort of write in a whole essay about your experiences, wanting to tell other people, whatever. So be careful not to allow that beautiful mindfulness to leak out. Keep that peace between you and the moment, that not demanding, that not expectation, that not wanting. Keep it still. And then the mindfulness gets even stronger. It gets so stronger it goes into the essence of the breath. The beauty, not the breath. The mindfulness is so strong it can't see the breath anymore, it can just see the bliss, the beauty. Nimittas come up. The nimitta, remember, is a reflection of your mind. It's a reflection of the power of mindfulness. If your mindfulness is that brilliant and strong, then that nimitta will be brilliant and strong. You're building up the energy. And so when nimittas come up again, don't allow the energies to leak. Don't allow any holes to appear in the mind. Don't allow the asavas, the outflowings, to take away that energy. You just got to hold on there to build up steam. So the nimitta gets brighter and brighter and brighter. So in each of these stages, that mindfulness builds stronger and stronger. When the jhanas happens, the mindfulness is so intense, but so still. Amazing to see something so powerful, yet so still. Because usually what we expect with energy is something throbbing and moving and creating and doing and stuff. But the energies of mindfulness in the jhanas are just absolutely still, but so powerful. Like the gentle giant, only just absolutely gentle and gigantic, the power of the mind in the jhanas. It's all a good way of looking at it, just the increase of mindfulness, the empowering of it, getting stronger and stronger. So you can also imagine that when those jhanas disappear, the amount of mindfulness, the power which comes out afterwards, the mind has been so still, the energies have built up and built up in the jhanas. When you come out afterwards, the mindfulness is huge. So powerful. And remember that these are the sorts of mindfulnesses which you can use for insights. This is actually where you've got a mindfulness free of the hindrances, strong and powerful, that you can understand what's really going on. And some of the things which you see people talk about, what awareness is and what pure mind is and stuff like that, once you have like this strong mindfulness, you can just see just how superficial all that is. Those strong mindfulnesses, that's where you can really find out the truth. You can get the insights. You can understand why the Buddha said to those ascetics, why the body is on fire, body consciousness is on fire, just the feelings are on fire. All the senses are sense objects, hearing, smelling, tasting, touch, your body is on fire. Whatever you feel is fire. Just all the things which arise from those feelings are on fire. Even your mind, just knowing, is fire. The mind is fire. And seeing all of that is hard to do. But once you see it with a strong mindfulness, as that sutta said, you get nibbida. And the nibbida is just a turning away from the whole thing. just revulsion. What am I getting into this for? Because once you start getting a little bit of nibbida, it's the mindfulness has given rise to insight, to wisdom. And that insight, that wisdom, will strengthen the mindfulness. Because you're not interested in allowing the mind's energy to just go out in those areas of, you know, the body and its feelings and worrying about how you feel and, you know, sleeping and looking at things and tasting things and stuff like that. All these things become like a waste of time. Even all these fantasies and families and wealth and stuff like that. You get this beautiful revulsion for these things. And because of that, more of the holes where mindfulness can leak out get blocked off. And the mindfulness just gets naturally stronger and stronger. You become a happy, incredibly wise person. Simply because that mindfulness is strong and powerful. So this is actually the growth, the story, the evolution of mindfulness from its early stages until the deep stages. So don't stop until that mindfulness is incredibly powerful. And once that mindfulness is powerful, it's amazing what you can do with it. One of those little teachings which I've been given to many of you, which you should always remember maybe at this time, is using that mindfulness, especially if it's powerful, to program your mind. Especially to give yourself instructions. Especially to warn yourself of the dangers. Because especially at this stage of the retreat, sometimes that we forget our mindfulness is not strong enough. So you can use the times when you have got reasonably strong mindfulness, you can almost like use some of that energy to invest it and cash it in at later times when you really need it. Called programming mindfulness. Is any problem you have in your meditation, or just even in your daily life, identify that. What's the problem? And then tell yourself, if I get to that state again, this is what I will do. I won't go the old way, I'll go this new way. Giving yourself those instructions is just so powerful. All you need to do is just make that suggestion. And especially any obstacles you have in the deeper stages of meditation, even like learning how to turn from awareness of the breath into awareness of the beautiful breath. Know what the obstacle is. You're still holding on to this breath. You won't let it go. You're just holding too tight, which means that there's too much doing going on there. The energy is being lost in that holding, which is why the beauty can't arise. So if you always get stuck in that state, just tell yourself at the beginning of every meditation or the times when you have enough mindfulness and awareness to tell yourself, when I get to that stage, I will let go, I will relax, I'll make peace with that full awareness of the breath. That's good enough for me. Whatever you say, make it very clear, and you'll find at that particular time you will remember. It's amazing just what happens. You're watching that breath going in, going out, full awareness, and then something tells you, now's the time to let go even more. This is good enough. Relax. I'm content with this. And this attitude comes up in the mind. You've done this so many times, it's incredible just to watch it coming up just at the right time. And after you to say, why did it happen then? And you realize, ah, that's right, because I said that. That's what I told myself to do. Put the program in. But it's so effective at the deep stages of meditation simply because you do the work beforehand so you don't disturb it when it happens. It just becomes this natural movement of the mind, the programming mindfulness. It's one of the reasons I teach, so that you know exactly what the path is, so you can actually program yourself to follow that path and to miss all of the obstacles by informing yourself of what you need to do and then doing it. So programming mindfulness is great. You can even use it on just ordinary things. If you're eating too much, just program yourself before you even see the food. Once you see the food, it's too late. So even before you see the food, you know, you first get up in the morning or in the evening when you don't feel all that angry, just program yourself, tomorrow when I put food in my bowl, I won't put this in, I won't put that in. Do that. just make a clear resolution, and then tomorrow when you're picking your food up, you find, hey, I'm more mindful. Because you put that in your brain, you put that in your mind, sorry, and it works. And that can actually solve a lot of problems by programming your mindfulness. And it's a great way to actually to move through these states of meditation. Sometimes people want some guides, they want a sort of some balance between, you know, Ajahn Brahm's doing absolutely nothing and actually doing something. Because sometimes people get a bit lost with the not doing practice, which I teach. Sometimes I'm not supposed to do anything, therefore I won't even sit, I won't even get up in the morning. I just sleep. Wake up in the morning at 4 o'clock, Ajahn Brahm said don't do anything. So you just stay there. All doing is going to sort of waste my mindfulness. So you don't even turn over. And obviously you're missing the point completely there. So you can always do a little bit just by saying, you know, even before you go to bed, at a particular time, when the bell goes, or my alarm goes at 4 o'clock, I will jump up and say zippity-doo-dah. Jump up completely without even looking at the clock. You tell yourself that. It's amazing when that bell goes, that's what happens. Because you're programming your mindfulness. So it's not really much of a doing, it's just a slight little nudging of the mind every now and again. Just to block off those ways where the mind can go into dullness, so it's sloth and torpor, it's a hindrance, it's a doing. When you sort of indulge in sleep. So after a while, you know, you find how you can actually almost like regulate in a sense, the day, by giving yourself these little commands, these little suggestions. You just say that in the morning, I get up at 4 o'clock, go to the toilet, wash my face, and do walking meditation. Just tell yourself that. But don't make such a big deal of it. Sometimes when we worry about it, we think about it too much, and then it never works. It becomes just a way where the energy just dissipates, just through thinking. So we have this very refined way of practicing. We make this suggestion clearly, we listen attentively, it programs the mind, we don't need to do it again. So we can have all this stillness, but still be able to give commands. Just like an abbot or a general, you can still run the army, you don't need to be giving orders all the time. Just a small order every now and again is all that's needed. And this is actually how you can run and be the general of your practice. Don't always give suggestions, don't always be on top of the mind, don't always be telling yourself what to do and getting down upon yourself. Just every now and again, program the mindfulness and then shut up. Now watch present moment awareness. Shut up and just do it. You'll find the mind is very amenable to suggestions if you give it the chance to follow the orders. So this is actually another part of mindfulness called programming your mindfulness. And that way there's a tiny bit of effort there, but it's not an effort which really disturbs the whole process. It's a nice little balance for those of you who still misunderstand what I mean by just letting go, being content, not doing anything, just allowing things to be. And that way that you find you are walking a lot, you are sitting a lot, you're using this wonderful opportunity of this rage retreat to build up the mindfulness, to make it strong. So it brings you this clarity, this energy, this happiness. So you get into the samadhi and the mindfulness becomes so incredibly strong. First thing is to build up the power. And once you have the power, then you have to know where to put it. And of course, where you put it, you can still put it between you and the objects. Because there also you'll see anicca, dukkha, anatta. You'll see just the way that relationship informs you of just what's going on inside. Because one of the signs of a self is the doing, the ownership. The self, a me, a mine, has to exert itself, has to show it exists by doing something. All like life, you know it's a life, you know it's alive, if it moves, if it responds, if it reacts. You poke it, and if it pokes back, well, the thing's alive. And so this, all this activity, that which occurs between the knower and the known, shows you there's a knower there, there's a being. And this is actually when that doing stops. So does the sense of self. So an incredible number of insights can happen when you get very, very strong mindfulness. But when you can't see that gap, when you don't even have much of an idea of what the knower is, what the known is, then there's no way that insight could arise. It's just assumptions, ideas. They may sound good, especially if they make it look easy. Because people always like easy wisdom. But the point is that much easy wisdom is actually false. It never really leads to enlightenment. It never leads to peace, to happiness, to freedom, to liberation. But this way of the Buddha, building up mindfulness so strong, that's the way. And of course, once mindfulness is that strong, in those bojangas, the enlightenment factors, you say from that mindfulness, then you investigate dhammas. The investigation of the dhamma is the second enlightenment factor. But you can't do that until the mindfulness is strong. So don't go investigating too early. Build up mindfulness which is so strong that it's the jhana-type mindfulness. Incredibly powerful and bright. And then you can investigate things. With that degree of mindfulness, following the Buddha's teachings, then you'll be able to see all these great teachings of anicca, dukkha, anatta, and sunyata as well, and emptiness. Only then can you truly know. Which is why I always say that if a person hasn't achieved those jhanas, their mindfulness isn't just strong enough. It's not still enough. And the data which they use to actually to find out their insights is just not full, it's not complete. There's got too many pieces of the jigsaw puzzle are just beyond them. Once you have those jhanas, you have all the data, and also you have the power of mindfulness, then you're off. Then you have what it takes. At the same time, you have this beautiful, happy path, energized, power path, of the increase, the gradual increase of the power of mindfulness, and with it, the power of your inner happiness. Whatever you experience, the quality of your mindfulness impregnates it. Low mindfulness means depression, sadness, upset, grumpiness, suffering. Strong mindfulness means more joy and happiness. Very strong mindfulness, superpower mindfulness means bliss. So that's the way that mindfulness works. So that's a little talk this evening on the power of mindfulness. So please develop it in the first weeks of this retreat rather than trying too hard for samadhi. Mindfulness first, then samadhi will come naturally afterwards.
Sukhati Thago Bhagavata.